went through the whole record of the thing with Bathsheba and the child dying and everything, and we left off in verse 24, where we stopped. And it says, and David comforted Bathsheba, his wife, and went in unto her and lay with her, and she bare a child, and he called his name Solomon, and the Lord loved him. And he sent by the hand of Nathan the prophet, and he called the name Jedidiah because of the Lord. So that kind of ends that record and the problem that he had. But I wanted to talk about for a minute the sin that David committed, and in retrospect, look at what Saul did. So we know that he committed adultery with Bathsheba. He conspired and had Uriah murdered, and he coveted, lusted after Uriah's wife. So in addition, he caused the death of other people, other men that were with Uriah. So he shed innocent blood. So all those things compiled are pretty bad. Now, I want you to go to 1 Samuel 13. We already looked at this a while ago, but just to refresh ourselves. It says, Saul reigned 1 year, and when he reigned 2 years over Israel, Saul chose him 3,000 men of Israel, whereof 2,000 were with Saul at Michmash in the Mount Bethel, and 1,000 were with Jonathan at Gibeah of Benjamin. And the rest of the people he sent every man to his tent. And Jonathan smote the garrison of the Philistines that was at Geba. And the Philistines heard of it, and Saul blew the trumpet throughout all the land, saying, let the Hebrews hear. And all Israel heard say that Saul had smitten a garrison of the Philistines, and that Israel also had an abomination with the Philistines, and the people were called together after Saul to Gilgal. And the Philistines gathered themselves together to fight with Israel, 30,000 chariots and 6,000 horsemen, and people as the sand which is on the seashore, in multitude. And they came up and pitched in Michmash, eastward from Beth Aven. When the men of Israel saw that they were in a strait, for the people were distressed, then the people did hide themselves in caves, and in thickets, and in rocks, and high places in the pits. And some of the Hebrews went over to Jordan, to the land of Gad, as Saul, he was yet in Gilgal with all the people, and followed him trembling. So, you know, this is the way it went. And he tarried 7 days according to the set time that Samuel had appointed, but Samuel came not to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. And Saul said, bring hither a burnt offering to me and peace offerings. And he offered the burnt offering. And it came to pass that as soon as he had made an end of the offering, the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came, and Saul went out to meet him that he might salute him. And Samuel said, what hast thou done? And Saul said, because I saw that the people were scattered from me, and that thou camest not within the days appointed, and that the Philistines gathered themselves together at Michmash, therefore, said I, the Philistines will come down now upon me to Gilgal, and I have not made supplication unto the Lord. I forced myself, therefore, and offered a burnt offering. So, you know, sense knowledge wise, this would not look anywhere near as bad as what David did. You know, he offered a burnt offering, like he's saying, well, you know, I might die, so I want to make my peace with God. But he says, I forced myself. And Samuel said to Saul, thou hast done foolishly, thou hast not kept the commandment of the Lord thy God, which he commanded thee. For now would the Lord have established thy kingdom upon Israel forever. But now thy kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought him a man after his own heart. The Lord hath commanded him to be captain over his people, because thou hast not kept that which the Lord commanded thee. So he really was... What he did was he disobeyed, right? He disobeyed God. But then when he is confronted by the man of God, he tries to rationalize and justify himself. He says, you know, I only did it because I wanted to make an offering. Well, he wasn't told to make an offering, was he? And so anyway, now we go to chapter 15. Verse 1, and Samuel also said to Saul, the Lord sent me to anoint thee to be king over his people, over Israel. Now therefore, hearken thou unto the voice of the words of the Lord. So he's getting a second chance, right? He's getting a second chance. God's already said, well, you're not going to have the kingdom forever like I originally said because you disobeyed. But Samuel comes to him again, and he says, okay, you've been anointed, you're anointed of the Lord to be over Israel. So now hearken, listen to the commandment of the words of the Lord. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, I remember that which Amalek did to Israel, how he laid wait for him in the way when he came up from Egypt. Now go and smite Amalek and utterly destroy all that they have and spare them not, but slay both man and woman, infant, suckling, ox, and sheep, camel, and ass. So that's what he told them to do, right? So now we go to verse 9. Because it says in verse 8 or verse 7, Saul smote the Amalekites from Havilah unto thou comest to Shur that is over against Egypt. And he took Agag, the king of Amalekites, alive, and utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword. But Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep and of the oxen and the fatlings of the lambs and all that was good, and would not utterly destroy them. But everything that was vile and refuse, that they destroyed utterly. Then came the word of the Lord unto Samuel, saying, it repenteth me that I have set up Saul to be king. For he has turned back from following me and hath not performed my commandments. And it grieved Samuel, and he cried unto the Lord all night. Mm. You know, it really hurt Samuel because he loved Saul and you know, he had anointed him king and he cared for his, you know, for Israel. And when Samuel rose early to meet Saul in the morning, it was told Samuel, saying, Saul came to Carmel, and behold, he set him up a place and has gone about and passed on and gone down to Gilgal. And Samuel came to Saul, and Saul said unto him, blessed be thou of the Lord. I have performed the commandment of the Lord. Well, that's not true, is it?
No.
And Samuel said, what meaneth then the bleating of sheep in mine ears, and the lowing of oxen, which I hear? And Saul said, they have brought them from the Amalekites, for the people spared the best of the sheep and of the oxen to sacrifice unto the Lord thy God, and the rest we have utterly destroyed. Now, you know, I'm not so sure that the people did it because they were so religious or wanted to bless God. I think they saw, wow, we could get some good animals out of this. And, you know? But anyway, that's Saul's excuse. That's his rationalization. So he's trying to make a reason for what he did, an excuse.
The blame.
Yeah, he doesn't want the blame. And Samuel said to Saul, stay, and I will tell thee what the Lord has said to me this night. And he said unto him, say on. And Samuel said, when thou wast little in thine own sight, wast thou not made the head of the tribes of Israel, and the Lord anointed thee king over Israel? And the Lord sent thee on a journey and said, go and utterly destroy all the sinners of the Amalekites and fight against them until they be consumed. Wherefore didst thou not obey the voice of the Lord, but didst fly upon the spoil and didst evil in the sight of the Lord? And Saul said unto Samuel, yea, I have obeyed the voice of the Lord. I have gone the way which the Lord sent me, and I have brought Agag, the king of the Amalekites, and have utterly destroyed the Amalekites. But the people took of the spoil, and the sheep and the oxen, and the chief of the things which should have been utterly destroyed, to sacrifice unto the Lord thy God in Gilgal. You know, this reminds me of something. We had a president one time named Harry Truman, and he had a sign on his desk. It said, the buck stops here, meaning he was going to take responsibility for everything. And he's the guy that ordered the atomic bomb to be dropped. And he took full responsibility for it. Saul was the king, and the king had total authority. You know, he didn't answer to a Supreme Court. He didn't answer to the high priest, even. He didn't answer to a parliament or a Congress. He's the king. And so when he says, well, the people did this and the people did that, if they did and they were wrong, he should have punished them, or he should have made a stand against them. But he didn't. And he puts the blame on them. Samuel said, Hath the Lord as great a delight in burnt offerings? Verse 22. That's where I am, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Burnt offerings as in obeying the voice of the Lord. Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken better than the fat of rams. Well, that's a pretty significant and important statement. You know, it is better to obey than to sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams. You know, no matter what sacrifice you make, it's more important to obey God. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness as the iniquity and idolatry. Because thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, he hath also rejected thee from being king. So Saul gets a second chance. He gets a commandment from the Lord. He's confronted. He lies. But he sounds very religious again, and he continues to try to rationalize and say, you know, I just did it because the people wanted to. So, you know, sense knowledge wise, when you compare that to what David did, you would think, wow, well, David did much worse than Saul. But the difference was that when Samuel was confronted in chapter 12 of 2 Samuel, David's response to the reproof was, I have sinned. He didn't give any excuses. He didn't give any lies. He didn't rationalize. He just said, I have sinned. He took full responsibility. And taking that full responsibility, he knew that God could say, you should die. But he didn't. So, by the time Saul goes to the Witch of Endor, of course, he's already so far gone, there's no going back. He has no hope of changing and going back. We have seen how Saul reacted when reproved. He tried to rationalize and explain, and only in the end did he finally admit his fault. Whereas David immediately said, you know, I have sinned. And what a great thing that is, that he was so willing to take responsibility like that. So, let's go back to 2 Samuel. And go to chapter, where were we, 12? And we've,
yes.
Yeah.
12.
We finished 25. Okay, verse 26. And Joab fought against Rabbah of the children of Ammon and took it, the royal city. And Joab sent messengers to David and said, I have fought against Rabbah, and they have taken the city of waters. Now, therefore, gather the rest of the people together and encamp against the city and take it, lest I take the city and it be called after my name. And David gathered all the people together and went to Rabbah and fought against it and took it. And he took their king's crown from his head, the weight whereof was a talon of gold with precious stones, and it was set on David's head. And he brought forth the spoil of the city in great abundance. And he brought forth the people that were therein and put them under saws and under harrows of iron and made and under axes of iron and made them to pass through the brick kiln. And thus did he unto all the cities of the children of Ammon, so that David and all the people returned to Jerusalem. Okay, what does that mean? He basically made them slaves. So they did, you know, manual labor with saws and axes and plows, and they made bricks, just kind of like Israel did when they were in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where they were. So now we get to chapter 13, and we're not going to read it, but this is about Absalom. Absalom was the son of David, and I think he was the third oldest son. Now, this points out something. He was the third son of David with a Gentile mother, Maacah, daughter of Talmai, king of Geshur. Okay? So he's pretty old at this point, which tells you that time has passed, right? Since David was made king and, you know, he was in the wilderness, because his oldest son, Amnon, with a woman, another woman named Anahim, he has a problem. So Absalom has a sister, Tamar, and they're both very beautiful. He's a good-looking guy, and she's a beautiful young lady. And Amnon loves Tamar and conspires to get her to his house, and then he rapes her. Okay? So he rapes her, and Absalom is not very happy, and for 2 years he, you know, lets us build up inside, and finally he figures out a way, and he lays a trap for Amnon and has him killed. And then he takes off and he's gone. He goes to Geshur, where his mother came from, and stays with the king and for a couple of years. And then he comes back to Jerusalem, and he's in his house for 2 years, but David will not see him because David's upset about him killing his brother or half-brother. So that brings us to chapter 14. Okay. I didn't think we needed to read all that stuff. So chapter 14, verse 1. Now Joab, the son of Zeruiah, perceived that the king's heart was towards Absalom. Meaning he loved Absalom. And Joab, of course, was kind of like the general. He was the five-star general of the army of Israel. He was David's right-hand man. And Joab sent to Tekoa and fetched thence a wise woman and said unto her, I pray thee, feign thyself to be a mourner and put on now mourning apparel and anoint not thyself with oil, but be as a woman that hath a long time mourned for her dead, and come to the king and speak on this manner unto him. So Joab put the words in her mouth. And when the woman of Tekoa spake to the king, she fell on her face to the ground and did obeisance and said, Help, O king. And the king said unto her, What aileth thee? And she answered, I am indeed a widow woman, and mine husband is dead. And thy handmaid had two sons, and they strove together in the field, and there was none to part them, but one smote the other and slew him. And behold, the whole family is risen against thine handmaid. And they said, Deliver him that smote his brother, that we may kill him for the life of his brother whom he slew. And we will destroy the heir also. And so they shall quench my coal which is left, and shall not leave to my husband, neither name nor remembrance nor remainder upon the earth. And the king said unto the woman, go to thine house, I will give charge concerning thee. And the woman of Tekoa said unto the king, my lord, O king, the iniquity be on me and on my father's house, and the king and his throne be guiltless. And the king said, whosoever saith aught unto thee, bring him to me, and he shall not touch thee any more. Then said she, I pray thee, let the king remember the Lord thy God, that thou wouldest not suffer the revengers of blood to destroy any more, lest they destroy my son. And he said, as the Lord liveth, there shall not one hair of thy son fall to the earth. Then the woman said, let thine handmaid, I pray thee, speak one word unto the Lord my king. And he said, say on. And the woman said, wherefore thou hast thought such a thing against the people of God? For the king doth speak this thing as one which is faulty, in that the king doth not fetch home again his banished, meaning Absalom. He was banished. He was in exile. For we must needs die, and are as water spilt to the ground, which cannot be gathered up again. Neither doth God respect any person, yet doth he devise means that his banished be not expelled from him. Now therefore that I am come in to speak this thing unto my lord, the king, as it is because the people have made me afraid. And thy handmaid said, I will now speak unto the king. It may be that the king will perform the request of his handmaid. For the king will hear to deliver his handmaid out of the hand of the man that would destroy me and my son together out of the inheritance of God. So she's given him quite a talking. Then the handmaid said, the word of my lord the king shall now be comfortable. For as an angel of God, so is my lord the king to discern good and bad. Therefore, Lord, thy God will be with thee. Then the king answered and said unto the woman, hide not from me, I pray thee, the thing that I shall ask thee. And the woman said, let my lord king now speak. And the king said, is not the hand of Joab with thee in all this? He was pretty perceptive there, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He realized he was being worked. And he said, you know, this sounds like something Joab would figure out. And the woman answered and said, as thy soul liveth, my lord king, none can turn to the right hand or to the left aught that my lord the king hath spoken. For thy servant Joab hath bade me, and he put all these words in my mouth of thine handmaid, to fetch about the form of speech hath thy servant Joab done this thing. And my lord is wise according to the wisdom of an angel of God, to know all things that are in the earth. And the king said unto Joab, behold, now I have done this thing. Go therefore, bring the young man Absalom again. And Joab fell on the ground in his face and bowed himself, thanking the king. And Joab said, today thy servant knoweth that I have found grace in thy sight, my lord, O king, in that the king hath fulfilled the request of his servant. So Joab arose and went to Geshur and brought Absalom to Jerusalem. And the king said, let him turn to his own house, and let him not see my face. So Absalom returned to his own house and saw not the king's face. So, you know, they went through all this stuff, and he stayed there for 2 years. And then it says, but in all Israel there was none to be so much praised as Absalom for his beauty. From the sole of his foot even to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him. So this guy was a good-looking guy. And everybody liked him because he was handsome. Everybody likes somebody that's good-looking. And when he pulled his head, which means when he cut his hair, for it was at every year's end that he pulled it or cut it, because the hair was heavy on him. Therefore he pulled it. He weighed the hair of his head at about 200 shekels, after the king's weight, which I looked at, it says, one place I saw it said 5 pounds. Mm. His hair weighed 5 pounds. That's a lot of hair. He had a thick head. Mm-hmm. So, And unto Absalom there were born three sons and one daughter whose name was Tamar. She was a woman of fair countenance. So he named his daughter after his sister. So Absalom dwelt 2 full years in Jerusalem and saw not the king's face. Therefore Absalom sent for Joab to have sent him to the king, but he would not come to him. And when he sent again the second time, he would not come. Therefore he said unto his servants, see Joab's field near mine, and he hath barley there. Go and set it on fire. And Absalom's servants set the field on fire. Then Joab arose and came to Absalom into his house and said unto him, wherefore have thy servants set my field on fire? And Absalom answered Joab, behold, I sent unto thee, saying, come hither, that I may send thee to the king to say, wherefore I am come from Geshur. It had been good for me to have been there still. Now, therefore, let me see the king's face, and if there be any iniquity in me, let him kill me. So Joab came to the king and told him, and when he called for Absalom, he came to the king and bowed himself on his face to the ground there before the king, and the king kissed Absalom. Which simply means, you know, already we have a little view into this guy Absalom, because he burned a guy's field.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not averse to putting pressure on people, and he's not afraid to do things. But he comes to his father, and his father forgives him. He kisses him, which means, you know, he says everything's okay between us. So, So Absalom is the third son of David, and Amnon, the one he killed, was the oldest son by Ahinoam, and she was one of the wives. She was a Jezreelite, and she was with Abigail when they were wandering, when he was a fugitive, and he was wandering in the, you know, in the wilderness, I guess. So, you know, Absalom was in exile for 3 years, then 2 more years in Jerusalem. But finally, Joab, on his behalf, goes to David, and David forgives Absalom. So we have seen that the two of David's sons are not so great. One rapes a sister, and the other one kills him for it. So, but we also see that David is very willing to forgive. So now we get to chapter 15. And it came to pass. I'm getting a text in my ear. And it came to pass after this that Absalom prepared his chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. Now, again, I have to say, so he had this son, who's his third son. He had Amnon, who was his first son, and they're grown men. So the time between when he was wandering in the wilderness and he becomes king and he's living there is, you know, quite a, it got to be 20, 25 years at least.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know how old Solomon is at this point. But anyway, it comes to pass after this that Absalom prepared him chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. And Absalom rose early and stood beside the way of the gate. And it was so that when any man that had controversy came to the king for judgment, then Absalom called unto him and said, of what city art thou? And he said, thy servant is one of the tribes of Israel. And Absalom said unto him, see, thy matters are good and right, but there is no man departed of the king to hear thee. Moreover, Absalom said, moreover, O that I were made judge in the land, that every man which hath any suit or cause might come to me, and I would do him justice. So what is he doing? He's going outside the city gate, and when people are coming from the surrounding tribes to go to speak to the king or his people, Absalom is saying, you know, if I was put in charge, you would get justice.
Mm-hmm.
So what's he doing? He's subverting David the king. He's trying to make himself look good and make the king look bad. Absalom, okay, so verse 5. And it was so that when any man came nigh to him to do obeisance, he put forth his hand, took him, and kissed him. So he's showing, you know, tremendous kindness to these people. But for an ulterior motive. And on this manner did Absalom to all Israel that came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. So he steals the hearts, meaning what? He's convincing them that he's a better guy than David. And it came to pass after 40 years. Okay, that is an interesting thing, 40 years. It says, it came after 40 years that Absalom said unto the king, I pray thee, let me go and pay my vow, and I have vowed unto the Lord in Hebron. 40 years doesn't seem to make sense, but in the Septuagint and in the Syriac texts or the Aramaic texts, many of them anyway, they say 7 years. And that would make more sense.
In
okay.
ESV, it says 4.
Okay. So 4 years, 7 years. Yeah, it's not 40 years.
Not 40. It could be maybe that he was 40.
So if it's 7 years, it could be the 3 and the 5 and 2. Or if it's 4 years, it's 4 years from then. Anyway, so it wasn't that long. It wasn't 40 years. For thy servant vowed a vow while I abode in Geshur in Syria, saying, if the Lord bring me again indeed to Jerusalem, then I will serve the Lord. And the king said unto him, go in peace. So he arose and went to Hebron. So he's telling David, you know, I made a vow, I will serve the Lord. So I want to go get off by myself in the countryside and go to Hebron. And I'm going to get right with God. Aha. But Absalom sent spies throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, as soon as ye hear the sound of the trumpet, then you'll say, Absalom reigneth in Hebron.
Oh.
He has coronated himself, made himself king in Hebron. And with Absalom went 200 men out of Jerusalem that were called, and they went in their simplicity, meaning they didn't know why they were going with him, and they knew not anything. And Absalom sent unto Ahithophel, the Gilonite, David's counselor, from his city, even from Gilo, while he offered sacrifices, and the conspiracy was strong, for the people increased continually with Absalom. So this is interesting. So he gets a hold of this guy, Ahithophel, and he's a counselor with David. He's friends with David, but Absalom gets him to join his conspiracy. And there came a messenger to David saying, the hearts of the men of Israel are after Absalom. And David said unto all the servants that were with him at Jerusalem, arise, let us flee, for we shall not else escape from Absalom. Make speed to depart, lest he overtake us suddenly and bring evil upon us and smite the city with the edge of the sword. And the king's servants said unto the king, behold, thy servants are ready to do whatsoever my lord the king shall appoint. And the king went forth and all his household after him. And the king left 10 women, which were concubines, to keep the house. And the king went forth and all the people after him and tarried in a place that was far off. And all his servants passed on beside him, and all the Cherethites and the Pelethites and all the Gittites, 600 men which came after him from Gath, passed on before the king. So when David hears about this, he knows he's in trouble, because all the other tribes, there's, you know, he's got Judah, and the other tribes are with Absalom. So he takes his whole family, his servants, everybody, and leaves. You know, women and children. And he had a lot of wives at this point, and concubines, obviously. And the Cherethites and the Pelethites apparently were mercenaries that were loyal to David. They, for some reason, they became friends with him, and they were like his royal guard. And the Gittites were men that followed him from Gath when he had gone to Gath at one point, and they were also loyal to him. They followed him back to Jerusalem. Then said the king to Ittai the Gittite, he was the head of these guys, "Wherefore goest thou also with us? Return to thy place and abide with the king, for thou art a stranger and also an exile. Wherefore thou comest but yesterday?" Meaning, you know, you're a latecomer to this whole thing. Should I this day make thee go up and down with us? See, I go whither I may return thou, and take back thy brethren, mercy and truth be with thee. And Ittai answered the king and said, "As the Lord liveth, and as my lord the king, surely in that what place my lord the king shall be, whether in death or life, even there also will thy servant be." So this guy was committed to David. And apparently, you know, they saw David and his relationship with God, and these guys all were converted. You know, they decided to believe in a true God. And David said to Ittai, "Go and pass over." And Ittai and the Gittite passed over, and all his men and all the little ones that were with him. You know, they had their families. And all the country wept with a loud voice, and all the people passed over. And the king also himself passed over the brook of Kidron, and all the people passed over toward the way of the wilderness. So that's something. So, you know, David gets through the whole thing with Bathsheba, and then he's there for a while, and then Absalom causes this problem as the one brother rapes one of his daughters, and then the other brother kills the other brother, and then the brother comes back and David forgives him, but this guy is harboring ill will towards David, and he rebels. He wants to have a coup, take over the kingdom. So, and lo, Zadok also and all the Levites were with him, bearing the Ark of the Covenant of God, and they set down the Ark of God. And Abiathar went up unto all the people until all the people had done passing out of the city. And the king said to Zadok, "Carry back the Ark of God into the city. If I shall find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he will bring me again and show me both it and his habitation. But if he thus say, 'I have no delight in thee,' behold, here am I, let him do to me as seemeth good unto him." The king said also unto Zadok the priest, "Art thou not a seer? You know, aren't you a prophet? Return unto the city in peace, and your two sons with you, Ahimaaz the son, and Jonathan the son of Abiathar. See, I will tarry in the plain of the wilderness until they come word from you to certify me." Zadok, therefore, and Abiathar carried the Ark of God again to Jerusalem, and they tarried there. So he sends those guys back to Jerusalem. And if everything works out, then they will send the two sons, Ahimaaz and Jonathan, to let them know. And David went up by the ascent of Mount Olivet, or the Mount of Olives, and wept as he went up, and had his head covered, and he went barefoot. And all the people that was with him covered every man his head, and they went up weeping as they went. And one told David, saying, "Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom." And David said, "O Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. Because that was his counselor. That was the guy that, you know, gave him advice and helped him. But now he says, you know, God turned this guy's counsel into foolishness. And it came to pass that when David was come to the top of the mount where he worshiped God, behold, Hushai the Archite came to meet him with his coat rent and his earth upon his head. You know, he was all dirty, his clothes were ripped. Unto whom David said, if thou passest on with me, then shalt thou be a burden unto me. But if thou return to the city and say unto Absalom, I will be thy servant, O king, as I have been to thy father's servant hitherto, so will I now also be thy servant, then mayest thou for me defeat the counsel of Ahithophel. So, you know, he prays that Ahithophel's counsel will be foolish, and then this guy shows up, and God shows him that he can make a difference. He can screw up this guy, Ahithophel. Verse 35, and hast thou not there with thee Zadok and Abiathar the priest? Therefore it shall be that what thing soever thou shalt hear out of the king's house, thou shalt tell it to Zadok and Abiathar the priests. Behold, they have there with them their sons, Ahimaaz and Zadok's son, and Jonathan, Abiathar's son, and by them ye shall send unto me everything that ye can hear. So Hushai, David's friend, came into the city, and Absalom came unto Jerusalem. So this guy Hushai is going to be a spy. He's going back to Jerusalem, and he's going to pretend that he's a servant of Absalom. When David was a little past the top of the hill, behold, Ziba. Do you remember Ziba?
No.
Ziba was a servant in Saul's house, and Mishaphat. I can't remember the guy. How do you say the guy's name? Yeah. Say it again.
Mephibosheth.
Yeah, he was the guy with lame feet, and God had, or David had promised Jonathan that he would, you know, take care of Saul's relatives and his children, and Mephibosheth, whatever his name is there. Well, Ziba was his servant, and he took care of the property of this guy, and Mephibosheth sat at David's table. Okay, so David was a little past the top of the hill. Behold, Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, met him with a couple of asses saddled, and upon them 200 loaves of bread and 100 bunches of raisins, 100 summer fruits, and a bottle of wine. And the king said unto Ziba, what meanest thou by these? And Ziba said, the asses be for the king's household to ride on, and the bread and summer fruit for the young men to eat, and the wine that such as be faint in the wilderness may drink. And the king said, and where is thy master's son? And Ziba said unto the king, behold, he abideth at Jerusalem. For he said, today shall the house of Israel restore me the kingdom of my father. So this guy, Mephibosheth, remember, David made a promise to him. He said, you'll sit at my table and you'll eat for the rest of your life, and I'm giving you the lands back of your father. And this guy should have been thankful. But now Absalom's coming, so he thinks, well, now we're going to get my father's throne back. Then said the king to Ziba, behold, thine are all that pertain to Mephibosheth. And Ziba said, I humbly beseech thee that I may find grace in thy sight, my Lord, O king. So when he tells him what happened, David says, okay, Ziba, all that belonged to this guy who turned against me, it's now yours. And he says, well, thanks. He's happy about it. And when King David came to Baharim, behold, thence came out a man of the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, or Shimei. the son of Gerar. He came forth and cursed still as he came, and he cast stones at David and at all the servants of King David, and all the people and all the mighty men were on the right hand and on his left. And thus said Shimei, when he cursed, come out, thou bloody man, thou man of Belial. The Lord hath returned upon thee all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose stead thou hast reigned. And the Lord hath delivered the kingdom into the hand of Absalom, thy son, and behold, thou art taken in thy mischief, because thou art a bloody man. So this guy is a bitter guy. He's one of the family of Saul. But remember, David had promised not to take any vengeance on Saul's family. He had left them alone. But this guy obviously thinks that Saul should still be king, and that David took it away from him, which he didn't. Then said Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, unto the king, why should this dead dog curse my lord, the king? He refers to this guy as a dead dog. Let me go over, I pray thee, and take his head off. You know, just take my sword out and just give him one whack and he's done. And the king said, what have I to do with you, ye son of Zeruiah? So let him curse, because the Lord has said unto him, curse David. Who shall then say, wherefore hast thou done so? And David said to Abishai and to all his servants, behold, my son, which came forth out of my bowels, seeketh my life. How much more now may this Benjamite do it? Let him alone and let him curse, for the Lord hath bidden him. I don't know if that's true or not, but he just said, you know, leave him alone. He doesn't have anything to do with this. It may be that the Lord will look on my afflictions, that the Lord will requite me good for his cursing this day. And as David and his men went by the way, Shimei went along on the hillside over against him and cursed as he went and threw stones at him and cast dust. Man, you can just get a picture in your mind, you know? Yeah. This guy is out of his mind and he's cursing and jumping up and down and you know, spit's coming out of his mouth because he's so excited, and he's throwing stones and dirt. And all these soldiers are, you know, with David, and they're walking by and they're ready to kill him. But David doesn't let them. And the king and all the men that were with him came weary and refreshed themselves there. And Absalom and all the people, the men of Israel, came to Jerusalem, and Ahithophel with him. And it came to pass when Hushai, the Archite, David's friend, was come unto Absalom, that Hushai said unto Absalom, God save the king, God save the king. And Absalom said to Hushai, is this thy kindness to thy friend? Why wentest thou not with thy friend? So he knew that Hushai and David have been friends. And Hushai said unto Absalom, nay, but whom the Lord and this people and all the men of Israel choose, his will I be, and with him will I abide. So he's saying, you know, I'm faithful to the throne. Whoever sits on it, I'm there to serve. It's kind of like, you know, sometimes in government, you know, there's a guy and it doesn't matter who's the president, because a guy is so good at his job, he serves because he serves the country. So that's kind of how Hushai is putting himself as. verse 19, and again, whom should I serve? Should I not serve in the presence of his son? As I have served in thy father's presence, so will I be in thy presence. Then said Absalom to Ahithophel, give counsel among you what we shall do. And Ahithophel said unto Absalom, go in unto thy father's concubines, which he hath left to keep the house, and all Israel shall hear that thou art abhorred of thy father. Then shall the hands of all that are with thee be strong. So they spread Absalom a tent upon the top of the house, and Absalom went into his father's concubines in the sight of all Israel. And the counsel of Ahithophel, which he counseled in his days, was as if a man had inquired at the oracle of God. So was all the counsel of Ahithophel, both with David and with Absalom. So, you know, he looked like a really wise man, and everybody thought he was walking with God because, you know, his counsel was so good. So, anyway, what time is it? I think we should stop there, because 17 and 18 gets into a battle, and then we'll pick it up and we'll see what happens with Absalom. But we got a good start on this whole thing. It's just a long record, even though we skipped a chapter. But you're going to see how David comes out on this, and he just really stands for God. And then we're going to look at a couple of psalms that go along with this and what he writes at the time when Absalom turns on him, and also about some of the other people. So that's kind of interesting also. Not kind of interesting, it's very interesting. So we'll stop here tonight and we'll pick it up next Tuesday. Okay, Father God, we just thank you for your love and your grace. We thank you for the great example of David. What an incredible guy. And yet he's so human. He was so human, and he made mistakes, but then he was so humble to receive reproof and come back to you. And he didn't have the easiest life all the time, but he always stood and he always came back to you, and you always took care of him. So we thank you for that great record and that great example. And we just thank you, God, for allowing us to have your word and the beauty of it. And we just thank you for a great night, and everybody having a great rest and a great day tomorrow. In the name of your Son, Jesus Christ,
amen.
Amen.